Shavua Tov.
Shavua Tov.
Hope everyone's well. And today's daf is Kuf Mem Tes. We'll start here on Kuf Mem Ches Omid Beis with the Mishnah, which is four lines up before the end of the Omud. And this Mishnah deals with what's called the prohibition against reading Shtari Hedyotos. And that means that there are certain documents that are not to be read on Shabbos because they're not appropriate for Shabbos. The Torah says, V'daber Dovar, in Yeshayahu HaNavi, he tells us that our Dibur, the way we speak on Shabbos, should be different than we speak during the week. So if you have Shtari Hedyotos, different documents that may be legal documents, those are not appropriate for reading on Shabbos. Shabbos is a day that should be dedicated to spiritual matters, to study of Torah. And based on this Isur of Kriyas Shtari Hedyotos, the Mishnah takes it a little bit further. Mona Odom es Orchov v'es parperosov mipiv avolo minaksav. If a person on Erev Shabbos prepares a list in preparation for Suda Shabbos, and on that list he may have Orchov, a list of those people that were invited to join him for Shabbos meal. And he, of course, on Shabbos wants to know how many loaves of bread he should put out, how many guests he expects. Or paparosov, that's a word that refers to desserts, mine ma'adanim, sweets and so forth. And he wants to know how many portions he should have prepared. So he's not allowed to read this list on Shabbos, even though, again, he prepared the list on Erev Shabbos. He can only remember it bal peh, and perhaps he can look at his writings in order to remind himself, but he should not be reading it. And the reason for that is because if we allow him to read these lists, then he might come to read other documents. And as we said before, there's an Isur of Kriyas Shtari Hedyotos. The Mishnah goes on to talk about lotteries. Mafis Milosha is the active verb of the noun pious. Pious means a lottery. Mafis Odom, you're allowed to set up this lottery, but only for the sake of your household members, Bonov Ubnein Bene Beso, Ala Shulchan. Now what happens is there are different portions. All the portions are really the same in terms of objective value, but it could be that one person likes, you know, he likes to get the chicken tops, and the other one likes to get the flegel, and so forth and so on. So you're allowed to set up this lottery. But Ubuvachal is coming Lasos Monik Dola Kenegan Monik Tana. But on the other hand, it becomes more of a kind of a gambling situation if one lot will be worth more than another lot. So let's say, for example, someone who wins this lot has won the gamble and he'll get a double portion. So that we're not allowed to do. That's already smacks of gambling, which is not something that would be appropriate. Now the Mishnah goes on to talk about Gorolos, about setting up these lotteries for Kodshim, amongst the Kohanim. And the Mishnah allows it on Yontif, Metilim Chaloshim. Chaloshim is another word for Gorolos. The Gemara is going to analyze the etymology and the source of the word Chaloshim, that it means Gorolos, it means these lots. And we're allowed to draw these lots Al Kodshim B'Yontif. In other words, when they shechted karbonos on Yontif, the basar, the meat of the karbonos, would be divvied up amongst the kohanim, and we don't want to have a situation where the Kohanim are fighting one against the other who will get to eat the basar or the karbanos, so we do lotteries. Avalol amonos, however, if we're talking about kodshim karbanos of yesterday, meaning of Erev Yontif, and in the case of Shlomim, where there's a time allotment that would extend from Erev Yontif into Yontif, those portions we don't divide up on Yontif through a lottery, because that could have been done on Erev Yontif. And the implication of our Mishnah is that as far as Shabbos is concerned, they didn't allow any lotteries. Now we're going to begin the daf for today. That's Kuf Mem Tes Omen Aleph. My Taima. The Gemara wants to know, why is it that the Mishnah prohibits reading out this list that you had prepared on Erev Shabbos, so that you know how many guests to expect and how many dessert portions to prepare? So the Gemara offers two answers to this question. Now, it's not clear, and that's going to be the whole sugya, whether each mandiyomer, each opinion excludes the other opinion or is just adding to the other opinion. Rabbeinu Omar Gzeira Shem Yimchok. We're afraid that if he reads out this list of the guests, then what he's doing is he's really telling his shamash, his second in command, to go invite these people, because he had in mind that they would be participating in the Suda. And you know what? He may decide, well, we don't have enough food. He may change his mind. And inadvertently, without even thinking, he takes a pencil and he crosses off a name from the list. And then he comes to violate the Isur Mechika, which is one of the 39 Melachos. Abaye Omar Gzera Shema Yikra Bishtarei Hedyotos. That if we allow him to read these lists that he prepared on Erev Shabbos, on Shabbos, then he may come to read other kinds of documents that are monetary in nature, which you're not allowed to read on Shabbos. My Beinayu, the Gemara wants to know, what is the nafkamina between Rav Bibi's understanding of Shema Yimchok and Abai's understanding of Shema Yikra Bishtari Edyotos? Ika Beinayu, the nafkamina is going to be the Kosav Akosel. Back in the day, sometimes, we also have something similar where you post something on a wall, you know, in a little post, but they used to actually write it on the wall, probably in a very temporary kind of way. And umidli. Midli means it's hovering on a higher level. And therefore, although he could read what's written on the higher part of the wall, he cannot reach it with his hand. Lamandi Omer Shem Yimchok Lo Chayshinon. If you take the approach of Rabbi, here in this case, we don't have to worry about the possibility that he'll climb up on a ladder and start erasing names. That's a little bit too far out. But Lamandi Omar, Shema Yikra, if we're afraid that he's going to come to read Shtari Adyotos and Chayshinon, what difference does it make whether he's reading a writing that's higher up and he can't reach it, or he's reading it lower down at eye level? It doesn't matter. In any event, he's reading something which you could call, in the broader sense, a shtar, even though, again, this is not a monetary document, but nevertheless, it's something that he wrote up, a list. He wants to know who's coming, who's not coming. And we have the Gzera Shema Yikra. Now, this Gemara that we just read now is based on a number of assumptions. Number one, we're assuming that when Chazal instituted a Gzera, then that gzera only applies when there's a real serious fear that he might come to violate an Isur D'oraisa. But if there are situations as such that we have no reason to suspect that he'll violate an Isur D'oraisa, for example, the ksav is now so high up that he's not going to come to erase it, then the gzera doesn't apply. That's a tremendous assumption, because we know that in many cases of gzera, we'll apply the gzera as a separate rule that prohibits X under all circumstances. We're not going to differentiate between cases where there is a chashash and he may violate the d'oraisa or not. That's called lo plug. So that's going to be a major subject of this Gemara that we're learning today. Under what circumstances do we apply the principle of lo plug and we extend the gzera straight through? Another premise the Gemara seems to be asking is, assuming, is that Rav Bibi and Abaye are mutually exclusive. Each one holds his own shita. So the Gemara immediately objects to this. Ulamandi Omar Shem Yimchok, and according to Rav Bibi, you're only afraid of Mechika, Necho Shem Yikra. Should Rav Bibi completely ignore the possibility that if we allow him to read this document, he might come to read monetary documents? Vesu, and furthermore, are you able to really argue L'shem Yimchok Lo Chai Shinon, that since in this case where he wrote it on a high level and it's almost unthinkable that he would climb up on a ladder in order to start erasing things, by then he'll certainly remind himself that it's Shabbos, that's not really so vasnan. If we go back to the first perek, lo yikra liora ner, that if you read something directly to the candlelight, we're afraid you might come to tamper with the candle. Shema yates aner. Now what happens if the ner is much higher up? And Omar Rabba, Rabba says, afil govosh te komos. Even if it's on the second floor, a koma is really the size of a human being. Let's say the average size of a human being is, we'll throw out 6 feet, right? So you multiply it by two, it's 12 feet. It's 12 feet high. And that's where the Nair is. He's reading down here. The Nair is up there. And you would say, well, in this case, it should be allowed because there's no Gzera Shemiyata. Vafilu Govosh Temar Da'os. And even if it's even higher than that, it's the height of Mar Da'os, Mar Da'of, Mar Da'of, Mar Dea, if you may remember, is that part of the saddle over the donkey. And it was used as a kind of a shear of size. And according to the Bar Tanura, in a different part of Masechta Shabbos, he says that Rabba is going from less high to more high, and there's even less of a chashash of Shemiyata, and nevertheless it's prohibitive. Afilu, and even Asara Batim Zel Gabize, even you have a 10-floor apartment house, and he puts the candle 10 floors up, and he somehow gets enough light from the candle, I don't know exactly how that is, still Lo Yikra, he's not letting him read. Basically, we've established here, with regard to Ner, Lo Yikra Liora Ner, a principle called Lo Plug, that when the Chachamim institute a prohibition, a Gzera, they don't make distinctions. Well, let's allow it in these circumstances, let's make exceptions because there's no chash and he won't climb up and he's not going to play with the nair. It's an absolute all-inclusive prohibition, and therefore, as we apply that to the case of Shema Yimchok, according to Rav Bibi, that he might come to erase something, it doesn't matter how high up he writes this ksav, even if it's high up on the kosel, nevertheless, there's a low plug. And based on this, the Gemara now retracts its original understanding of the nafkamina between Rav Bibi and Abaye, Ela Ika Meinayu, but rather the nafkamina between the two is the Kosav HaKosel Umitase. He writes the list on a lower part of the Kosel, and it's low enough that his hand can reach it, but it's a different kind of an entity. We'll explain. The Gemara says, "Lemandi Omer Shem Yimchok Chayshinon." Since he could bend over and reach the lower part, that's at ankle level, we have to worry that he might cross out something on the list. But "Lemandi Omer Shem Yikra," in this case, where he writes it low down on the kosel, "Lo Chayshinon," we're not afraid that he'll confuse this with Shtari at Yotos, and it'll come to read Shtari at Yotos. Why? Because Guda b'Shtari lo Michlaf. A person is not going to make a switch or an equation between a Shtar and a kosel. Guda is a kosel, a wall. So what he writes on a wall is not similar to what he writes on a document. Documents are meant to be moved from place to place, and therefore he understands very well that if he's reading something that's written on a wall, that's not going to come in his mind to lead him to the conclusion that he can start reading documents that are notarized documents. Now the Mefarshim point out that this stage of the Gemara is very difficult to understand, because the Gemara just finished saying that if he would have written it high up on the Kosel, then according to Rav Bibi, who's worried about Shema Yimchok, we don't have a Cheshash. But according to Abaye, who says the Gzeirah Shema Yikra Shtori Ad Yoltes, we do have a fear. Why is it that the Gemara thinks that Guda B'Shtar Lo Michlaf applies if he writes on the lower part of the Kosel, but not if he writes on the higher part of the Kosel? So this is a difficult question. Bach says the following, I'll just read it quickly. This is his interpretation of Tosus, Divya Maskel Laman Diyomar, the top Tosus here. He says, Mitchila, originally, Kshem Mida Gemara Samachlokes Beineyem, B'makom gavah b'kosel, asra gemara mishum kriyas shtari ad yotzis ki adayin lo ola bedat o lechalik ben kosel l'shtar. In other words, the Bach is saying that at the first point in the sugya, the Gemara originally didn't think that there was such a fundamental distinction between a wall and a movable document that's written on parchment. So the Gemara again rejects this interpretation that he wrote it low down on the wall. Ulamandi omer shemi yikro lechu shemi yimchok. Even if you hold, like Abaye, that we have to worry about Shtori Adyotos, and in this case that he wrote it on a wall, we don't have to worry about his coming to read Shtori Adyotos, but nevertheless, Abaye should also admit that we have to worry about Shemi Yimchok, and since he could bend down and reach the lower level of the Kosel, he might come to Mechika to cross out something. Elo Ika Benai, the Gemara offers another interpretation. What's the Machlokes, the Nafkamina in this Machlokes? The Dochik Atavla Va'apinkos. Now the word Dochik here in Hebrew is called Chakak. Chakak means he engraves it. He takes a knife and he engraves his list of who his guests will be in the desserts. A tavla. Tavla is a tablet of wood. And pinkas is another kind of a tablet that's made of a kind of wax substance. And they could actually engrave inside the wax. And this was used commonly by merchants that would calculate exactly all the cheshbonos on this kind of a pinkas. And the Gemara says this is going to be the nafkamina. If he wrote his list either on a tavla or on a pinkas, leman diyomer shemi yimchok lo chai shinon. Here it's going to be a tremendous amount of tircha to start erasing something which is actually engraved. And if he starts erasing something, and it's a long, tedious process, he'll remind himself that it's Shabbos. And therefore, if you assume, like Rav Bibi, that it's a problem of Shema Yimchok, here we're not worried about Shema Yimchok because it's such a tircha to accomplish the mechika in something that's already engraved. But Lomandi Omer Shema Yikra Chayshina. But if you're talking about confusing this kind of a tablet with other legal documents, there were many legal documents that were written on these kinds of tablets and pinkas, ledgers and so forth. So again, the Gemara is going to have the same objection. Lamandi Omer Shema Yimchok. Okay, so Rav Bibi says we're worried about Mechika. And here in this case, it's such a hassle to be Mochek that which is engraved, we don't have to worry about Mechika. But Lecha Shema Yikra, it cannot be that Rav Bibi should completely ignore the possibility that he's going to confuse this ledger that's written on a tablet and is very similar to your Shtar Yotos with a Shtar Hedja. And V'chi Tema, you'll tell me that Tavlo Pinkas B'Shtarlo Michlaf. And if you tell me that Shtars were written on parchments and they weren't engraved, it was just ink on a surface, And that's not similar to this engraving process in the cases of Tavla and Pinchas. Well, that's not so. Tadi, we have a brice that says, Mona Adam kama mi bifnim v'kama mi bachutz. If a person has a list in which he calculates which of his guests are going to sit on the inside, they get a special seat that's covered, and other guests will be seated on the outside. V'kama monos osid laniach lifneim, and he calculates and writes on his ledger how many portions he's going to designate for the various guests, is then miksav shal gabi akosel. We're allowed to read this off of a wall if he writes this list on a wall, avalomitoch, but not from ksav shal gabi tavlu pinkas. So we see that tavlu pinkas, although they're somewhat similar in the engraving style than writing with ink on a document, nevertheless they're similar enough to a document that we have to prohibit this, because he might come to read documents on Shabbos. And hefi dami, what exactly is the case in the Braisa? Elam, if you're going to tell me that the Braisa is talking about the ksiv michtav, that he's writing with ink on these tablets, is maishna hocha, maishna hocha. Then why would the Braisa have to bother telling me that he wrote on a tavla and a pinkas, and that's a problem of reading that? It's exactly similar to the case of Kosel. In other words, in Kosel he writes with ink, and now you're telling me he writes with ink on a tablet? That makes no sense. El Alav, it means that a tablet is different than a wall. The Dachik, because he's engraving it into this tablet. And therefore we don't have to worry. We have no fear of Mechika, that he might erase it, because as we said before, to erase something that's engraved is a whole long process. Uketani, and despite this all, the Braisa says that Michtov shal gabi kosel, that you're allowed to read that which you wrote on a kosel, avolo Michtov shal gabi tavlo pinkas, because if you wrote it on a tavlo pinkas, which means you engraved it, then we're afraid you might confuse that with a shtar hedyotos, and he's going to come to read shtar hedyotos. So once we see clearly from this braisa that even in the case of tavlo pinkas, we're still afraid that he might confuse that with a shtar, then how can you tell me that according to a bibi, when we're not worried about Shemi Yimchok because he engraved it, therefore he's allowed to read it, what about the problem which Abai raised of Shemi Yikro Shtori and Yotos? It's impossible for a bibi to totally ignore the issue of Shemi Yikro Shtori and Yotos, Eloli Olam. Therefore, if we want to understand the Machlokas between Rav Bibi and Abaye, we have to assume the Kosav Akosel Umidli, he wrote it high up on the wall. Udeko Kashalok, and you asked according to Rabbi Yadikasha. And it would seem that according to Rabbi, since he wrote it high on a wall, therefore we're not afraid that he might come to do a mechika. And we asked the question from Rabbi, because Rabbi said in the case of Kriya Miora Ner, even if it's 10 flights up, we still prohibit it. So the answer is, the Rabbi, the issue of Rabbi is really Tanoihi. You can't ask a kasha on Abai from Rabbi, because Rabbi's assumption that lo chilku chachamin because roseim v'lo plug, that the Rabbanan never make these distinctions, and therefore how could Abai possibly say that if it's written high up on a wall we're not afraid that it'll come to mechika? That itself is a machlokas tanoim. It's not fair to raise an objection for Rabbi on an issue about which there was a great controversy amongst the tanoim. This sanya. And where do we find this machlokas tanoim, which really relates to this svar of Rabba, that we have to prohibit it straight across the board in all situations, even when there's no real chashash? Mona adam es archosa es archov v'es parperosov mipiv avalomen aksav Rabbi Acha matim v'ksav shal gabi akosa. Rabbi Acha says that if he wrote this list on the wall, then it's okay, and he's allowed to read it from the wall. Hechi Dami, what's the case? Ilema dechsiv mitasa, if he wrote it lower down, lechel shemi yimchok, we certainly have to prohibit that, because he might come, his hand reaches it, and he'll make some emendations and crossing out. El olav, we have no choice, but the kosev umidli. It must be that he's not able to reach this high point where he wrote the list on the wall with his hand. It's too high up. And therefore not afraid that he might come to do mechika. Ushma mina, de rabba tanoihi. We see that the issue of rabba, do we apply lo plug and prohibit it straight across the board, is in fact a machlokus between the Tanakhama, this brisa, and Rabbi Acha. Because Rabbi Acha allowed you to write and to read, I should say, from a writing of a list that's high up on the wall, because we're not afraid of Shemi Yimchok. Yishmamino, we see clearly that the issue of lo plug is a machlokus tanoi. And in fact, this issue of lo plug really dates back to an old ancient machlokus. Hani tanoi, kehani tanoi. We find this machlokus as to whether or not the Rabbanon in the Xero supply lo plug is an issue in a brisa with regard to using certain kinds of mirrors on Shabbos. Ein roin b'mara b'Shabbos. If a person looks at a mirror and he tries to see, you know, where his hairs are, if maybe he has white hairs, he has black hairs, maybe he has hairs that aren't exactly in line and he needs to take them off, or he may have beard hairs. So in all these cases, the Tanakhama, this brisa, says you don't look into a mirror on Shabbos, because we're always afraid that maybe he'll get carried away with himself, he'll forget it Shabbos, and he'll start taking, you know, pulling out hairs. Or according to other Rishonim, we're afraid that he might be doing something that even during the week he shouldn't be doing, because women use mirrors and men don't use mirrors, and that comes under lo yilbash. In any event, the Tanakhama says you're not allowed to look into these mirrors on Shabbos. Rabbi Meir Matir b'mara kavua b'koso. Rabbi Meir, however, allows looking into a mirror in a case where we're not afraid that he might come to pull out hairs. And that's called a mare kavua b'kosa. Now here I want to read to you a note, a very important note here, regarding a mare kavua b'kosa. And he says the following. A mirror that's fixed to a wall, Rabbi Meir permits the use of a mirror that's fixed to a wall in a permanent way. And the Gemara now says, Maishna kavua b'kosa, why if it's permanently affixed to the wall, Rabbi Meir permits it. The adahochi v'hochi midkar. Because what's going to happen is, there's no utensil for cutting off hairs that's attached to the mirror. When a mirror is fixed permanently to a wall, then if he wants to cut off some extra hairs, he's going to have to fetch a pair of scissors. In the meantime, Rabbi Meir says, he is going to forget himself. I'm sorry, he's going to remind himself, hey, today is Shabbos, why am I running around looking for scissors? The Gemara says, Eina kavua nami. But what about in case of a temporary kind of mirror that's not fixed to the wall? Adahachi vahachi midkar. So the Gemara says, why not say that even if it's a temporary mirror that's only attached to the wall in a very temporary way, he also might forget, if he decides to take off a hair, he's going to run around looking for scissors. In the meantime, he'll remind himself of Shabbos. The answer is, Hacha b'varish al matefes haskinon. We're talking about a metal mirror. Ukid Rabbi Nachman, Omar Rabba Baravua, the Omar Rab Nachman, Omar Rabba Baravua, Vibneima Omru Mare Shalmatechas Asura. What's the deal with a metal mirror? Nesha Adam Osila Hashir Ba Nimin Hamidul Dolin. The mirror itself, in a case of a metal mirror, actually has a scissors, so to speak, built into the mirror itself. The edge of the mirror is very sharp. He doesn't have to get up and look for a scissors. He can just simply cut his hair off from the edge of the mirror. Rabbi Meir says that it depends. If the mirror is attached to the wall, then we really have to worry about this possibility. He won't even have to get up out of his seat in order to look for a scissors. If the mirror is unattached, then... Just one second. Just the other way around. Let me just get the mathematics here. If the mirror is unattached to the wall, it's not kavua, no kavua, then he's going to use the mirror perhaps to cut his hair. If it's attached to the wall, he's going to have to fetch a scissors. Now, it's not exactly clear why is it that if it's attached to the wall on a permanent basis, then he's going to have to fetch a pair of scissors. Okay? Now, let's suggest the following. That when he uses non-metal mirrors, let's say mirrors that are made out of glass, like our mirrors, then you're allowed to use such a mirror because that's already a different category of a mirror. And the original decree of not using this mirror on Shabbos was formulated in the case of a metal mirror, not in a glass mirror. And in the case of a metal mirror, he doesn't have to get up, as we said before, and look for a pair of scissors. If it's a mirror that's eino kavua, so the whole Isur, according to Rabbi Meir, was only in the case of, number one, a marshal mateches, and that's okay, that everybody agrees to that, but Rabbi Meir went a step further, and he said that a marshal mateches is prohibited, but only in a case where it's what? Where it's eino kavua. If it's kavua bakosel, then adahachi vahachi, he's going to have to run and get his scissors if it's kavua bakosel, and he's going to remember that it's Shabbos. So Rabbi Meir says that we're not choshesh in the case of a mara kavua, and the rabbonim say no. Even in the case of mara kavua, we apply the principle of lo plu. So apparently, he says that if he has these hairs that he wants to cut off, and he's going to violate Meleches Kotzer, Meleches Gozes, whatever it might be, if he cuts it straight away from the edge of the mirror, and in a case of a Mara Kavua, so Rabbi Meir says we're not afraid that he'll use the edge of the mirror in order to cut his hairs, his loose hairs. He's going to get up and find the scissors. It could be that what Rameh has in mind is that, you know, it's not a good idea to use the edge of a mirror. It might fall, it might break, it might get the... But in a case of a mirror that's not kavua, where he's only using it on a temporary basis, it's not a permanent attachment to his furniture, to his wall, then we're not afraid that he would actually use the side of the mirror to cut his beard. In any event, just to make a long story short here, Rabbi Meir says that we only apply the Isur of Mara in a case where there's a real chashash that he might come to Meleches Gozes, but in other cases like a Mateches Kavua, we're not afraid, and therefore you're allowed to use that mirror. The Rabbonin say no, lo plu. So this issue that is going to impact on our question about a list that he wrote high up on the wall, where Abai is going to say Gzeira Shemiyikur B'Shtari Ed Yotos, is not going, right, is going to apply here too, right? But as far as Rabbi is concerned, Gzeira Shemiyimchok, we're not going to apply Gzeira Shemiyimchok because he cannot reach the high part of the wall. And this is not a problem that we can object to Rabbi based on Rabbah's principle in Nair, because that issue of Rabbah as to whether or not Lo Plug applies is a Machlokas Tanoim. Tana Rabbana. Ksav HaMahalich Tachas HaTzura. If you have a kind of a piece of art, and he makes a tzura, he makes a beautiful painting of an animal, or perhaps some sort of biblical scene, like, for example, you know, David HaMelech and Goliath. Rashi gives the example that he makes a beautiful imagery of David and Goliath, and underneath the tzura, underneath the painting, he has a ksav, and he gives it a title. Or tachas ha-diukonios. Diukonios is what I said before, that painting of David and Goliath, for example. So underneath these paintings, he writes almost like a signature, the title of the painting. That this is a dmus, an image of so-and-so. Also, lekroso b'shabbos. Here too, we're afraid that you might confuse it with shtori hedyotos, because again, this is a written script which is not related in any way to Torah study or anything like that. It's totally secular. Udyukna atzma, and as far as looking carefully and gazing at the picture itself, the painting itself, af bechol, osur listakel ba, he shouldn't be looking at it with an intention. Again, some hold that what we're talking about is something three-dimensional, and therefore it's a little bit similar to Avodah Zorah. The Torah says, Elohei Masechel Osasu Lachem Ani Hashem. And we're not allowed to benefit and enjoy Elohei Masecha. So for example, when you go to a museum and you look at busts which are three-dimensional, that's a problem of Elohei Masecha. I mean, you have to find some sort of a heter for it. I don't know of a heter, but a two-dimensional painting is a little bit easier to find. But anyway, the Gemara is telling me, my Talmuda, what does the Pasuk say? It says, Nemar, Shenemar, Al Tifnu Elha Lilim, my Talmuda, Omer Chanin, Al Tifnu El Midatchem. So the El Lilim here in this pasuk is Miloshen Chalolim. Chalolim means when you create something that has a halal. And it means you shouldn't be looking at these creations of your hands, of human creations, because it's going to focus your heart on something that's similar to Elilim, the Chalal Shalachem. Then the Mishnah says, Mafis Adam, a person is allowed to set up a lottery in Bonov, in Bnei Beisal, a Shulchan, to determine who will get which, you know, which portion, as long as all the portions are equal in value, just one is the top and one is the bottom or so. But if it's one that's worth more than another than that, you're not allowed to make a lottery on Shabbos. And the Gemara now is Medayik from the Lashon HaMishnah. It says, in Bonov, in Bnei Beso, then you're allowed to set up these lotteries as long as they're all worth this, all portions are worth the same amount. In, that's allowed. Vim Acher, but if it's not one of his family members, lo, why should it make any difference about a lottery dividing up portions amongst his family as opposed to a lottery dividing up portions amongst other people who are not part of his family? My taima, kid Rabbi Yehuda or Shmuel, the Rabbi Yehuda or Shmuel, b'nei chabura hamakpidim zel ze ovrim mishum mida umishum mishkol umishum minya. On Shabbos, we are not allowed to measure things in a very specific exact measurement. We're not allowed to weigh things, we're not allowed to count up exactly how many. All these things are similar to what's called mekach u'memkar, buying and selling. So they're included in that gzera. And when it comes to bnei chabura makpidim zezeh, Shmuel says that people are makpid, they want to know that everyone's getting exactly the same value. They're very makpid in this case. Again, that's because they're not mevater one to the other, even on a davar muat. And therefore, if you set up these lotteries amongst others who are not family members, then there's a problem of mishkal mida uminya, because you're going to be calculating portions meticulously, exactly. It's a kind of like weighing them, which was prohibited on Shabbos and Yom Tov. and the or umishum lovin uparin biyantif. And even on yantif, the Chachamim say that you're not allowed to borrow, because if you borrow something, you might be tempted to write down a record of how much was borrowed, so you know how much you can collect when the time allotment terminates. So you're allowed to lend something and then give it back, but if you borrow something in a way that it's like halva upiron, which means that I'm going to have to pay you up, that's prohibited. And here also, when you have bnei chabura makpidim zeh, so if somebody would take a little bit more than somebody else, he's going to have to pay it back. Ukidivrei Hillel. Hillel says that it's usur to lend something in order to return. That's called alvas kikar almanas lahashiv kikar, because we're always afraid that it might go up in value, and af mishum ribis, and there's a ribis issue, because if, let's say, you pay me back, and now the object went up in value, I'm giving you back more than what I lent you. And in the case of bnei chabura, since they're matpid one on the other, they're not mochel, they're not forthcoming, and say, all right, you can get a little bit more than me, is therefore, it is a problem of halva in a context of Hillel with a ribis issue. If, on the other hand, we're talking about members of the family, then not makbid one on the other, they're mochel. So if one gets more than the other, he's mochel him. And therefore, none of the surim that we mentioned before would apply. So the Gemara asks the following question: Ihachi banav bnei beso nami, banav bnei beso hainu taimi kidi kidivarav shel Rabbi Yehuda or Rav Yom Rabbi Yehuda or Rav muta lahalvos lebanav bnei beso beribis kidei lat iman tam ribis, that you can go through a formal, but not really a legally binding process of lending to the members of your household. Let's say the father of the household extend, so to speak, a loan to one of the members of his household and charge ribis to it only as an educational experience, not really for the sake of collecting the ribis. There's no real kpeda over here. And he's going to go through the motions of something that looks like ribis in order for the child to feel and sense what it means to have to pay back an extra amount of money. And in the case of Atolas Goral, which was our lottery in our Mishnah, there's no kpeda, and all the portions are equal, there won't be any jealousy here, and there won't be any kpeda. The Gemara says, Ihochi mona gdol k'neged mona k'tana nami. What happens if you set up a lottery in which somebody's going to get a double portion, and somebody who gets the raw end, the lowest, smallest stick, he's going to end up with one portion? Even that should be mutter. Why? Because since everything really is coming from the balabayas, nobody's stealing anything, and there's no gambling over here, because again, you know, the father is more than happy to give a larger portion to one than another. So the Gemara answers, Enochi nami. It's really true that amongst the Bnei Beso, you'd be allowed to set up this lottery even if one portion is worth more than another. And we're not going to consider that like Hillel's halva beribis, because the father is giving out portions. He's giving out gifts. That's not called gambling in any sense. Is the Gemara answer is that chisuri mechzer v'hachi k'tani, we have to rewrite the Mishnah a little bit. There's something missing in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah should read, Mafis Adam im bonav im bnei beis al shulchan afilu mona gdola keneged mona ktana. This is not a kind of gambling. There's no stealing over here. Even if one portion is worth more than the other, my timer based on Kiddur Rabbi Yehuda Omar Rav, who said that a father is allowed to lend money to his household members and charge them ribis only for an educational purpose. They should experience what it means to have to pay ribis, and then they'll avoid charging ribis. And we're also going to allow now a lottery in which the members of the household will get different portions of different values. That means mana gedola keneged mana ketana. And again, they're going to get a sense of what it's like to get involved in gambling, and hopefully they won't want to do it again. Because I don't understand one point over here. The one who wins the higher portion, he might be sucked into gambling. That I don't know. But I guess over the course of time, if the father does this on a regular basis, then eventually you're going to lose. Now the Gemara continues in explaining our Mishnah. In Bonavim B'nei Beso In Imacherim Lo, we said that these kind of lotteries are permissible with regard to the members of the household, but not others. And it would seem to imply that even if all the portions are worth the same amount, we still don't do this lottery. My time, Kidder Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel, that B'nei Chabura Makpidim Zel Zeh, and therefore we're going to have to calculate meticulously that every portion is exactly the same, and that's already a prohibition because of Mida Mishkal of Minyan. And up until this point in the sugya, we were learning the laws of Goral, of lotteries for Shulchan, for the Shabbos table. And we said that when it comes to the B'nai Beso, his household members, then it's permissible, but it's not permissible for other people to divvy up portions for the guests who are not part of the household. Now, keep in mind that the issue of Goral in the Mishnah, it emphasizes Bilvad Shelo Yiskaven Lasos Mona Gedola Keneged Mona Ketana, and the Gemara is going to point out that this Iser of making lotteries in which one person will, if he wins the lottery, get a larger portion of the other, that's not a Shabbos issue exclusively. That's going to apply even during the week. That's gambling. And the Gemara explains that mona gedola keneged mona ketana af bechol la'acherim asur. Again, as far as B'nai Beso is concerned, this is an educational process that the father wants to teach his children what it's like to lose something in a gamble. But as far as other people are concerned, which is a serious, real gamble, this is gambling. You're not allowed to do this if the portions are different in value. My time of course, Mishum Kubia. This comes under the Iser of gambling. And the Gemara says in Masech the Sanhedrin that gambling is prohibited because Asmachta Lo Kanya, nobody thinks he's going to lose, so he really doesn't have Das Machne, and therefore it's kind of a Gezel Midevrayim, a rabbinic violation of theft. The Mishnah says, Matilin Chaloshim Alakodshim B'yontif Avalo Alamonos, that those karbonos that were shechted today on Yontif, you're allowed to set up lotteries as to determine which of the kohanim will eat from that basar of the karbon, but not from yesterday's karbon. My avolo ala monos. Omer Rav Yaakov, brei de Rav Yaakov, avolo ala monos shel chol b'yontif. We're not going to allow gorolos on Yontif for the kodshim that was shechted on Erev Yontif. The Gemara says, Pshita, certainly anything that you could do on Erev Yontif, you're not allowed to postpone it until Yontif, and here you could have done the Gorolos on Erev Yontif. So what was the Havamina that would allow you to do these Gorolos, to set up which Kohanim would eat the Kodshim on Yontif, vis-a-vis Karbonos that was shechted on Erev Yontif? And the Gemara says, Ma'o Detema, I would have applied the principle of a pasuk in Hosea Navi. Hosea says, "Holuksiv." Since Hosea says the following, "The Amcha Kimarive Kohen," the Navi is giving tochacha to Klal Yisrael, and he's saying you're fighting amongst each other like the Kohanim fight over the various portions of the karbanos. Is therefore I would think I feel almanis the chol even on a karban that was shechted on erev yontif. We're going to allow Gorolos. Why? In order to avoid these kinds of fights for the sake of Shalom. Kamash Malon, the Mishnah wants to tell us, no, we're not going to allow Hatolos Gorolos, even if it means that the purpose of the Gorol would be to prevent friction and altercations and fights and so forth and so on. That we're only going to allow on Yontif itself, because he couldn't have possibly set up the Goral on Erev Yontif. But if it's Monos of Erev Yontif, and therefore he could have set up this Goral on Erev Yontif, then we're not going to allow you to do this Goral on Yontif, even though you're risking a kind of a friction. V'yomar Rav Yaakov, braid Rav Yaakov, kol shechavero nenash al yod, listen, agadeta. A person who was victimized by someone, and as a result, that person who victimized him is going to be punished, then even the victim himself is going to be punished. In what sense? Ein machnisen asobim chitzosa shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's not going to be close to Hashem. Hashem rejects him because he was the cause for someone else to be punished. And the Mefarshim say that we're talking about a situation where he sort of enjoys the fact that somebody else is going to be punished because of the evil that person perpetrated against him. And even though, again, he didn't bring about that evil, he was, on the contrary, he was the victim of that evil, but nevertheless, he is the one who is the conduit, the cause, and he's very happy about that so-and-so is going to be punished. And that's not a good thing. Minolan, how do we know? What's the source of this? Ilay mishum dechsiv. We're talking about Achav, who is the king of Israel. And he was a very bad king. And one of the various, very bad episodes in his life was that he put someone by the name of Navos HaKarmeli, HaYisraeli, he put him to death. But he was guilty of many, many sins, this Achav. He was a real Rasha. And the Nevi'im told him a false prophecy. They knew that in a certain battle against Aram in a location called Ramos Gilad, he would perish. And 400 Nevi'im told him that he's going to win the battle. Now, what happened was that one particular Navi by the name of Michiyahu ben Yamla, he came up in front of the Kisei HaKavod. And I'm going to read to you some of the psukim which don't appear here in the Gemara. It says, "Vayomer lachen shma dvar Hashem, ra'isi es Hashem yoshev al kiso, v'chol tzva shamayim omer olav miyamino mismolo." And what happened was that this Navi, Michayahu, in his Ruach HaKodesh, he saw that up in Shamayim there were two groups of malachim, on the right side and the left side. The ones on the left side were saying, we got to get rid of this Achav. He's a terrible person. He should die. And at the end, they took a vote, and they decided up in heaven that Achav has to die. Vayomer Hashem, mi yifateh es Achav? So God turns to the Nevi'im, and he says to them, who will entice Achav, Yal, the Yipol Beramos Gilad, that he will go climbing up to Ramos Gilad, and there he will die. Vayomer Zebeko v'Zeomar Beko. Each one of the Nevi'im said, I'll know the way to seduce him to go up there. And Vayetze Aruach. At the end, which one of these celestial beings actually got the job? It was Vayetze Aruach Vayamod Lufnei Hashem Vayomer Ani Afatenu. It was some sort of a Ruach, some sort of a spirit of the dead, and we'll see whose spirit that was. And Hashem says, how are you going to convince and seduce Achav to go up on Ramos Gilad? Vayomer Eitze Vehayisi Ruach Sheker Befi Kol Nevi'im. Nevi'av, I will send a certain spirit through all the Nevi'im to offer a false prophecy, and they will all prophesize, 400 Nevi'im will prophesize to Achav that he's going to win this battle. Vayomer tefate v'gam tuchal teitze v'asei ken. So God gives this Ruach the job. You know, he presented his thesis and his power and what he's going to do, and God said, all right, you go ahead and do it. However, there are a couple of extra words over here, and it says, tse vaseichen. God could have said to him, ase. What's tse vaseichen? So the Gemara first asked, well, let's identify the identity of this Ruach. Who is this ruach? Amrinon, my ruach. Om Rav Yochanan, ze ruchol shel novos ha-Yisraeli. In other words, after Achav had novos bumped off, then somehow the neshama of novos is this ruach that comes up in front of the heavenly courts and wants to get revenge, so that he wants to be the one to bring about the punishment to Achav that he should die in Ramos Gilead. Who might say, and why does Hashem say tsay? That's an extra word that doesn't have to be there, it's superfluous. Amarav tsay mimechitzasi. Get out of here. I don't want to know you. You're the ruach sheker, the fiyah neviim that's bringing about the punishment to Achav, and therefore you fit this category of chavero nena shal yado. You're bringing about the punishment of Achav. You shouldn't do so. And therefore, emach nisan also b'mechitzos shal kadosh baruch hu. The Gemara rejects this. This is not a good source for this principle. V'dilma hasa my taima. Why is it that in this case Hashem throws this spirit away from him? Same b'mechitzos, get out of here. Tichsiv, based on a principle that's formulated by David Melch and Tillim, Dvar dover shkarim lo yikon l'neged einai. Anyone who speaks falsehood, I don't want to have anything to do with them. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, kat shakronim, those who fabricate the truth and lie, einam akabelis pnei shchina. They can't come into the close proximity of the Almighty. And therefore, if this ruach is coming to instill sheker into the pi hanavim, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, get the heck out of here. I don't want to have anything to do with you. Get out of my mechitza, because dover shkarim lo yikon. Ela mihocha, but rather we have to derive it from a pasuk that refers to Nebuchadnezzar. Now, as we're going to see soon, Nebuchadnezzar forced all the different kings. Nebuchadnezzar was the king over the entire world, and in order to make laughter, so to speak, and subjugate all the other kings, he used to invite them for sodomy, for a homosexual act that was public with all the kings sitting around. And every single king would get his day, and there would be a lottery. And when it came to the day of Tzidkio Melch Yehuda, that he would be subjected by Nebuchadnezzar to this sodomy act, so as a result, God brought about a terrible embarrassment to Nebuchadnezzar. And that's codified in a pasuk in Chavakuk, which says, Savata kolon mikavod shsei gamato vehe orel. Savata kolon mikavod zenebuchadnezzar shsei gamato vehorel zetzidkio. So what happened was that on the day in which Tzidkio, according to the lottery, was meant to be subjected to this act of sodomy by Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar was punished, and his orel. Now the word Ariel, if you take it apart, is 300, and his organ, his private parts, extended 300 amas, encircled around all the kings that were at the table. It was a terrible embarrassment to Nebuchadnezzar. And therefore, Tzidkio is going to be punished, and it says, Shesei gam ata, you will also drink from the cup of embarrassment, of humiliation, because you were the one who brought about the punishment to Nebuchadnezzar. So the Gemara rejects this. Chada, first of all, kulei kra b'Nebuchadnezzar ksiv. This pasuk is not referring to Tzidkio when it says gam shesei gam ato, but that's referring to Nebuchadnezzar, that you too will drink from this the cup of embarrassment, because you gave that cup to all the other kings. V'odin, furthermore, it's impossible to say that Tzidkio would suffer and be rejected from the mechitza of HaKadosh Baruch Hu because of the punishment meted out to Nebuchadnezzar. Tzidkio tzaddika, Tzidkio is a great tzaddik, mayhavile lemevadle. Well, what should he have done? I mean, he was being called in for this act of sodomy and being raped, so to speak. And now HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought about a punishment to Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, that's not something that Tzidkio can in any shape or form be saying, that we can consider him a conduit, that he's bringing about the punishment to Nebuchadnezzar. The Omer Rabbi Yudah Marab B'Shosh Shabikesh Oso Rosh Alasos Oso Tzadik Kach. At the moment that that Nebuchadnezzar tried to do the sodomy act to Tzidkiyahu, and the Gemara is going to tell us what a bizayon, what humiliation Nebuchadnezzar suffered. But again, you can't say that Tzidkiyahu, the tzaddik, should be held responsible for that punishment when HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervened and embarrassed, humiliated Nebuchadnezzar. Elami hacha, but rather we have to derive from a pasuk in Mishlei. And the pasuk in Mishlei says, Gam anosh la tzaddik lo tov. That if an onesh comes about through a tzaddik, then that's lo tov. Ein lo tov el ra. When it says lo tov, it means some sort of ra. That a tzaddik will be punished if through the tzaddik there's an onesh tera. Uksiv, and it says in Tillim, ki lo el chafetz rasha ata lo yogurcha ra. Okay, let's just read the English translation here. He says that to punish is for the righteous not good. Okay, Pasuk in Mishlei. The term not good is evil. It means evil. And it's written about evil. For you are not a God who desires wickedness. Evil does not abide with you. Tzadik ato Hashem v'lo yogur b'megurcha ra. You Hashem are righteous, and therefore an evil one shall not be allowed into your abode. So one who causes the punishment of another, that's defined as evil, and such a person is not allowed into God's abode. And this is what confirms the statement of Rabbi Yaakov. My mashba dahai chaloshim lishna de purahu. How do we know that the word chaloshim used in the Mishnah is a reference to a goral, to a lottery? The chsiv apostle in Yeshayo, that in his nevuah, Yeshayo speaks about the fall of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel. Ech nafalto mishamayim, helel ben shachar, nigdato laoretz cholesh al goyim. How have you fallen from heaven, O shining one, son of dawn? You've been cut down to the ground, the one who casts lots. Cholesh means lots for the nations. Amar Rababar Rav Huna Milamed Shoyamatil Pur Al Gdole Malchus. Right, Nebuchadnezzar would cast lots for the members of the kings, the royalty who had conquered. Leida Eza ben Yomo Shol Mishkav Zohar, what was the day of that particular great member of royalty to be subject to rape, to sodomy? Uksiv kol malchei goyim kulam, all the kings of the nations, all of them lie in glory, everyone in his own house. Amrab Yochanan, shenochu mi mishkav zohar. In other words, on the day that Nebuchadnezzar died, they rested from sodomy. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, kol yomav shel oso rasha lo nimtza schok b'peh kol birya. There was no laughter in the mouth of any creature as long as Nebuchadnezzar was alive. Such a tyrant he was for the entire globe. Shenemar nocha shokta kol aretz patzchu rina. That on the day of his death, it says that all the earth has become calm and tranquil. They burst forth in song. Michlal, it implies that ad hashta lo havirin. Until the death in Nebuchadnezzar, there was no song. V'yom Rabbi Yitzhak, Om Rabbi Yochanan, Osir lamad v'beisav shalosh rosha. The demons hang around the palace of that king, meaning of the wicked man Nebuchadnezzar. Shenema u'seirim yirakdu sham. And this is a pasuk in Yeshayahu HaNavi. So you don't want to get hurt by going into that area where the palace is, because the demons are actually still there, even today. When Nebuchadnezzar wanted to sodomize Tzidkiyahu, the righteous Tzidkiyahu, Nimshicha or Loso Shlosh Meos Amo, his foreskin extended 300 amos for Hoysa Machazeres Al Kol Hamasiba Kula. It surrounded the entire gathering of all the kings. What a humiliation. Shenemar, as it says, Savata Kolomi Kavod Shisei Gamato Vehaarel. You have been sated with shame rather than honor. You too shall drink and have your foreskin exposed. Vayearel. And Arel Bigmachia Shloshmeos Havi. And the word Orel, if you take the Ayin, is 70, the Resh is 200, the Lamed is 300, is 300, is 30, the Lamed is 30, is 300. V'yomer Abiyudam Rabbi Shoshi Yored also Rosh LeGehenim. When Nebuchadnezzar died and he came to Gehenim, is Rosh who called Yored Gehenim. All the evil people in Gehenim got very scared. Why? They said, Shem Elimshal Aleim Hu Ba. Is he coming to join us like all of us, or is he coming to rule over us? Olei Choleis Kemosam Hu Ba. He'll be weak as all of us. They spoke about themselves in third person. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, in Yeshayo Anovi, Gam Ata Chuleisa Kamonu Eleinu Nimshalta. Have you too become as weak as us? Or have you been made to rule over us? That's what they were asking the members of Gehenna. Yotza Baskol V'yomra, the heavenly voice declared, Mimi na'amta rida v'hoshkiva es arelim. Whom do you exceed in beauty, descend, and be laid to rest with the uncircumcised? Which really means that, do you think that you're better than the others? Go down into Gehenna, take your place alongside all the wicked ones who are here. And Ein Shavas Noges Shavsa Madheva. Okay, now the Gemara is going to interpret this pasuk in Yeshayo Anovi Madheva, translated as the golden one. So that we'll have to Mitzvah pick up tomorrow. And we're going to stop here on Daf Kuf Mem Tes Amid Beis. Two lines up before the end of the Om. Okay, have a great day.